Okay. Calling this meeting, this work session of the Planning and Zoning Committee to order. Go ahead, Jim.
The part of the previous discussion where somebody was rebuilding and we took the percentage from 60% to 50%. My question is, does that help somebody rebuild or does it make it harder for them?
I think you're referring to the 50% valuation that we use to determine remodeling currently. That would, the 50% threshold would essentially go away for those properties. So it helps those properties because right now it almost penalizes the smaller properties for reinvesting just even a makeover, if you will, of the building that triggers that 50% valuation. So this only would help.
So this helps?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's all I had.
Okay. Well, before we get going, I just want to remind everybody and make clear that I do have a conflict of interest with final voting on the OAO. I own a very teeny percentage of some buildings in G. So today, as we go through the discussion, while I may pose questions and lead the discussion, I will do my best not to influence anything. And as we vote, on changes or move forward on changes, those will be up to you, and I will not be weighing in on those. So there's no conflict of interest. And with that, we should start on the top of page 9, where we left off.
Yeah, but do we have a quorum with just two of us here?
We are, yes. And Melissa are here also, so we have four.
I'm sorry, I don't see them.
They're not on the screen, Melissa.
Oh, I see them now, there.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. There we go. Hi, Melissa.
Hey, guys.
All right.
Wanted to welcome back a member of our department who was with us for a couple of years as a fantastic intern and has made his way back to City of Winter Park, Nick Lewis, as his recently graduated with his Juris Doctorate from Stetson University, and he is joining our team as a Planner One, so you'll get to see him plenty in the upcoming days. So welcome back to him, and we continue to have hopefully we'll have a somebody in the Planner Three position soon. We've still got that big hole in the department there that we're refilling, but we're getting stronger one day at a time.
Very good.
So, Mary, do I need to be made the
you are
screen
already
share
the
person? I am? Okay.
Yes.
Well, I am going to go ahead and share my screen. It gets tough for me to be able to see who is maybe raising their hand or saying anything. So you may have to speak up if I'm... if I'm unable to hear you. Oh, looks like it's okay. But I wrote stop here at the top of page 9 where we ended last time. So with that, Mr. Vice Chair, how would you like for us to continue?
We will continue the same way we were. We'll go through section by section. We are all good readers. So as we go, okay. I'll just ask if there are questions or points on a per section basis. I've made notes throughout, so we'll see how far we can get today.
All right. The next section we have is section I, block structure and circulation requirements. And this has to do, this is really both site planning and facade work here, and it's made to where we don't have large monolithic buildings, that there's breakups within the facade, and also to not have buildings that dominate an entire block, and to kind of put services at the back of house on some of these larger properties. So I won't read every single sentence, but in section one, does anyone have anything that they'd like to add?
No.
Okay, seeing none, I'll move on to section two. And I made this correction. This was the staff correction at 1.5 acres because one of the main properties, property I, which is the Bank of the Ozarks property, did not meet that 2 acre threshold. It's just shy of 2 acres. And so we went back to the 1.5 acre threshold that has to meet these criteria. Although I think we all know that's going to be a pretty tough, it's tough to fit a building into a triangle. So, but that was a staff correction there. So is there anything within
for us, this section is designed to keep it from looking like Maitland in 1792?
Essentially, and it's also designed to keep the blocks looking a little similar to what we have in our other areas, such as Park Avenue and Hannibal Square. I'll give you the best example. The north end of Park Avenue, though we love the museum that we're lucky to have there. We have a very long block with a building that is very monolithic in style across from the church that kind of creates a dead end. If you're walking and you're kind of strolling along the avenue and you're saying, "Hey, what's up there?" You don't know that there's more shops than that thing, that type of thing up there, because you've kind of lost your walkability. That there's not a lot of interesting facade or windows into the museum or anything like that. And so we've kind of created a gap between the main part of, we've created an island, I guess, with the place up where George's has relocated to and that sort of thing. So this is to try to break that up.
So does any comments, anybody have any issues with the 1.5 acres?
No, I'm fine with it.
All right. I have a question in section A, just a point of clarification.
Yes, sir.
The assumption is that this has to do then with buildings that are on properties that are 1.5 acres or larger. But I wondered if in section A, since it simply says new or redeveloped buildings within the OAO, do we need to specify the lot size there? Or is it assumed because it's under number two?
It's assumed because, or we may want to put, shall be required to create a block structure, there's corridors, there's... Maybe we say as outlined below.
That makes sense. Sure.
And then here's a question. If we have a redeveloped building, and I can't think of one that would meet this criteria, perhaps, to make somebody have to take if they're remodeling their building and to take it in, chop it in half or make a pathway through it. I honestly can't think of anything that would meet this criteria, but Well, I guess, you know, we now have the ability, everything will be a conditional use. So if somebody has a meaningful case, they can bring that before yourselves and before the city commission about being redeveloped.
Well, are there any vesting rights on these properties?
They are vested, yes.
So then would redevelop not make sense? Should it just be new buildings within the OAO?
In my opinion, it should be new buildings within the OAO. I may ask, I think I saw Mr. Langley on here. Mr. Langley, would you chime in on this? If we're creating these block lot configuration standards, newer redeveloped buildings within the OAO shall have, you know, if we're talking street frontage, it would potentially create something where they would have to remove a portion of the building in order to comply.
Well, I mean, obviously, if you're remodeling a building in the site or the envelope of the building isn't moving, it would make it difficult in most cases to create a new block structure. So, yes. I mean, I guess it depends on what you mean by redevelop. You know, some people would think redevelop could be a teardown and redevelop in the same envelope or on the same site. But I mean, yeah, there's something to consider there. If you're essentially requiring, if you trigger, the 50%, 60% rule, that you have to now chop up your property into block structures, that could be a difficult thing to do.
Okay.
So
so should we have something in here that says shall not apply to existing, these specific standards shall not apply, because there are still some architectural standards, breakup and that sort of thing, that would apply?
I think you have to clarify I think you have to clarify, if you're to put to existing, like what's existing on such a date, you're going to be very specific about that.
Yes, we've got that in the language where we talk about basically what is grandfathered in. About existing buildings. Should we say something such as existing buildings meeting these criteria shall only be required to update architectural facade? That work with members of the board?
The placement of that sentence in that location, I don't think is appropriate. I think you need to, if that's what the board's looking for, that needs to go at the end of the paragraph beyond subsection D, because okay. The sentence above is referencing the subsections. But don't make it an E, it just, you know, there you go.
All right. Does that look okay to the board?
Everyone okay with that?
Yep, looks good to me.
All right.
I think the word remodeling should be remodeled, I think, at that new sentence.
Good. Mm-hmm. All right, and then A through D, anything there?
Yeah, everybody's okay with the distances that are referenced?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to three.
Good. Street realignment, parallel Orange Avenue access. This is something we took out of the comp plan, stating that it really wasn't policy, but we've stated since the beginning that the intent was to create a secondary access in the form of Palmetto and that road going all the way through. And this just furthers that. We're already working on a portion of that. The only area where this would really affect at this point, I think I shot past there, would be the development of the D property.
All right.
Which we're trying to take Harmon and get rid of it, put Palmetto in the back of the property and have a right in, right out, and have Palmetto serve more of a purpose.
Hey, Bronx, is this street realignment all on the city money, or is the property owner contributing anything?
It depends on which property. So when it comes to the Progress Point property, that is on us. When it comes to the D property, it would be on them unless we come to a situation where we can go ahead and I'm already looking to get the right of way and have the right of way in hand, so that if that area is slow to develop, that we can go ahead and put in the what we need for Palmetto to work and to exist. But the intent is for the owner of the property on which it takes place to do the work to relocate.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right. Any other thoughts, comments on number three? All right, number four, street sections.
Okay. Basically, what we're trying to do is any new streets, we're trying to create a walkable environment, safe on-street parking where appropriate. We have some places where on-street parking is very difficult. Orange Avenue itself wouldn't change this, but in this case, as we redevelop other streets such as Palmetto and that sort of thing, we're looking to add on street parking where appropriate.
Now, I've got a question for you. In the very first paragraphs of section four,
yes,
where you say to create and maintain a quality, comfortable walking environment,
mm-hmm.
Quality is odd there. I mean, quality is just an attribute. So I don't know if you want to say a high quality or aesthetically pleasing.
I think just the word comfortable is probably appropriate.
That's fine.
Basically, a comfortable walking environment is something between, whether it's 2 feet of grass or something, it's something between you and the roadway. All right.
Hey, this is Sarah. I just want to add one comment to 4A. For parking space dimensions shall not be less than, that should be for perpendicular spaces, but for parallel spaces, they need to be 9 by 22 per FDOT.
needful. This is less than, what were your dimensions, sir?
For parallel spaces, it's 8 by 22 are the minimum dimensions.
8 feet. On street parallel or just parallel?
Definitely on street parallel. If we have them in a parking lot, we can do that on a case by case basis, but.
Sounds good. All right. It's always good to have a traffic engineer around.
Or D, is there a requirement for a covered bus stop?
Where we do have projects that have a Lynx stop in front of them, we are, as part of the site plan, will likely be requiring them to put in covered seating and waiting areas for Lynx.
So likely required?
They would be required.
So it's not, doesn't need to be part of this?
The only place this would apply is actually to Orange Avenue itself. And we've looked at the location of Lynx stops. We've incorporated one into the design of Progress Point. Sarah, do you have anything to say about bus transfers located inside project boundaries? Is that appropriate?
We don't have major transfer hubs except on Webster, so way outside of the OAO boundaries.
Yeah.
On Orange itself, we have one bus route that runs Orange.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if bus transfers would be appropriate.
Would the board be okay with removing this language that does not appear to apply?
Sure.
Okay. Everybody okay with that? Okay.
I'm.
All right. Any other comments on D, E, or F?
Well, I was just wondering about D.
About whether we should add the covered.
Yeah.
So it would be shaded sidewalks, comma, covered areas. What would you say?
I mean, is the developer responsible for a covered bus stop, or is that something the city provides?
So actually, Lynx has their own program, but they can't get to all of them. If a project frontage, lot frontage, or the bus stop is adjacent to the lot frontage, then the developer shall provide a covered stop for transit users.
The term that I think everyone's looking for is a bus shelter.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
sidewalks, benches. And what was your term, Sarah?
A bus shelter.
A covered bus shelter, let's put it.
All right. Does that look okay?
Good.
Okay. He's good. And then F is just kind of a cover ourselves.
All right, number five. I think we're good. We're good there.
Sidewalks, all. Basically, everything shall be linked with sidewalks. Sidewalks provided along public streets, 17-foot sidewalks for new developments along Orange Avenue. Fairbanks and Orlando provide sidewalks at least 10 feet wide with a minimum 5-foot landscape buffer along the back of curb, because they're, that is the DOT requirement. And also we have added our own buffering and landscape and lighting requirements for anything that is adjacent to FDOT rights of way.
Yeah, I have an issue with 5 feet, but that's just, if it's, if you want to follow the FDOT standards, that's okay. I just think 5 feet is really narrow for a street tree.
Oh, you say for a street tree?
Yeah.
You are correct. Buffer. That's why we have a special octagonal bump out that goes into the 10-foot sidewalk and into the, it utilizes the whole 5-foot landscape buffer, and then it skinnies down the sidewalk in those cases to make a very, very large area where, you know, the roots can grow and water can percolate and feed the root system. We've worked with our city arborist, and it is much better than those kind of 3x3 or 4x4 squares that we expect to grow a healthy tree.
But are you going to have that like in front of parcel J where there's,
yes,
no right of way?
Mm-hmm.
There's enough room in the right of way?
They have to dedicate right of way or dedicate easement for that, actually.
Okay. All right, good.
Okay.
It's going to kind of be one, you know, one piece at a time, but eventually our Fairbanks corridor is going to look very different coming in.
Very good.
All and right. Then all other sidewalks in the OAO, we put 10 feet in width and a minimum 2-foot landscape buffer. Those are kind of the side streets. A lot of those, the sidewalk will go right up to the edge of building because there will be zero side setbacks on a lot of the buildings, but just making sure we do have sufficient sidewalk width everywhere.
All right.
And then we just have A in here is you have to comply with our chapter on sidewalk cafes. We put 17-foot sidewalks on Orange itself because that gives enough width for whether it's sidewalk dining or outdoor display of wares, whatever it may be. You still have enough room for comfortable walking distance. We actually did a study based on the sidewalk widths of Park Avenue on what is comfortable, still allows you to have a comfortable stroll. If there is sidewalk dining, I mean, there's the breakfast place, but with on the north part of northeast part of Park Avenue, where you kind of have to go single file through there. We're trying to avoid that.
All right, number six.
So this is just as you develop that new 17-foot sidewalk, it may include some lighting, landscaping, street furniture, pedestrian easements, whatever is going to make that area better. It basically gives flexibility to staff, DNZ, and the commission to make sure that sidewalk is comfortable. And access, we want the trash cans to be placed at the rear of lots. We want access to restaurants to be through side streets off of Palmetto. And we don't want parking garages or curb cuts onto 1792 or Fairbanks. It's to really reduce the number of curb cuts and to make everything safer and more aesthetically pleasing.
All right. Any comments?
No.
Let's move on.
Okay. Architectural standards. Building height is something that within our current code kind of goes between feet and levels. We've used stories, but we've defined the height of a story. And also we've looked at, if you've got a wrapped parking garage, you can fit a lot more parking garage height within a wrapped building. You could, you know, potentially, if you have a tall three-story building, you could potentially have five stories of garage back there. And it's not going to make your building count as five stories. It's really only what is visible is what would count towards the height. And then the, you know, a lot of people like the tall first stories where you have open, you know, nobody's putting in drop ceilings and that sort of thing. So you have the open either height or the possibility of putting in a mezzanine, which does not count as a story. Right now in our current code, it would count as an additional building story, but you can have up to 20 feet floor height with a mezzanine, which really allows for some unique kind of cool development. 30% of your first floor, only 30% of your first floor can be within that mezzanine area. And there are some restrictions. You can't have anything in the mezzanine area that you don't serve on the ground floor without an elevator or something like that. But it just gives some flexibility on what can be built on those first floors. What we're seeing is people like the tall first, don't have to use it all. And then each floor above the first shall have a maximum height of 12 feet, which does give you, if you are putting office and you do need to put a drop ceiling, or if you're putting office without drop, or you're putting residential, you've got plenty of height for all your HVAC and that sort of thing. And then multi-story buildings, you have to have terracing, vertical articulation, creating relief to the overall massing. So basically anything over two stories is where you start to get into additional setbacks, step backs, so that we don't have any buildings that kind of diminish the walkable environment. Okay. And with, by the way, with these, they're hard to see, but if you zoom in, on any of these, they show up really, really well. They're really high definition, but they look a little fuzzy. So, but we talk about setbacks and stepbacks, anything over two stories in height has to come to a build two line. And then you have to start to step back 10 feet or be within the allowable building envelope that we outlined below. Nobody's going to build a, you know, an Aztec temple style building, but what it does is it pushes the building, if it's going to have a little more massing, it pushes it further back from the right of way to give a more comfortable walking experience. But I'll go back to this one. As you can see here, you have the same story of building if you're going from the center line of the road. For one thing, you've only got a 7-foot sidewalk. If you have a street tree on there, like on Orange Avenue right now, we've got those street trees at the end of the parking islands. They're already interfering with signage and that sort of thing because the crowns aren't fully developed. With the new standards, with the 17-foot setback, you'll have plenty of room for the development of a healthy crown. That is on Orange Avenue itself. This is Fairbanks here.
I have a question about this the one that you're on right now with the four stories. I was racking my brain trying to think of an example of where, of a building that looks like that.
It really is, that just shows the footprint that it has to be built to, because it's not cost effective to build like that.
Right.
Nobody builds like that. So if you're behind that line and you go a little bit higher and you have a step back after your first story or on your third story, I mean, this is only going to apply to a small section of subarea D, because that's the only portion that is going to, that doesn't have frontage on Orange and is going to be, you know, adjacent to 1792. So they can pull the building back and then not have to have that, the terracing like that.
True.
And also we've got extreme setbacks. And also it helps to match the other taller buildings on that corner there, on the, at that intersection with the kind of the taller, I guess, tallest buildings we have in town, some of them.
Okay. When I saw it, it just was like,
yeah,
who's going to build a building like that?
Yes, I'm totally with you.
All right, thank you.
And here is the, I think this is, I love what this shows here on the left. This is literally the Fairbanks current situation. And if you've walked that as a pedestrian, it's awful. You know, you could have a door opening right into your face. You've got to watch out for buses and large trucks and their windows. And this shows that with our, you know, our new 5-foot landscape buffer, where we can have the street trees every 50 feet and the lighting, and then the 10-foot sidewalk that very well may go, you can see here, this is the property line, 10 feet pedestrian easement goes into the property, but this has a pretty extensive setback. And then on the third floor or the fourth floor of anything on subarea J, we have an even further setback for subarea J. So you can see a lot more open space and room for sunlight and for the tree to grow versus this unsafe situation we've got here. And so all these colors here are just the allowable building envelope. You can't exceed that, but you can build inside of that area. And no more than two stories without a setback or step back, a cornice, a balcony, other major facade breakup, which create visual massing relief. Four feet. That'll all go through our architectural review board, then come to yourselves.
Any other comments on two? I think
we got the city arborist who's going to review all the trees proposed to make sure they're the right kind and placed correctly.
I think we're good, Ron. So let's go to three. Unless I hear
very good.
All right, number three.
Facades. Really, this just talks about breaking up the facades so we don't have, hate to pick on Jewett, but you have
section B. You have a typo there. Facades of buildings with a gross floor area of less than 10,000. You need to add the word 10.
Thanks, sir. We just don't want any more long stretches of all stucco, 400 feet of stucco, something like that. And actually the standards we used here, we borrowed from our friends at Orange County, they seem to work very well, and they'll go before our appearance review board and my staff before coming to you.
All right.
And then we've just got some examples of different facade breakups. This is where we get into, right here, we get into
pretty close to 1792, and it looks like, not very nice.
Say that again. I couldn't hear you, sir.
There's a two-story building going up currently on 1792. I think it's south of Mars. And it's all flat, and it's pretty close to the street. And it doesn't really look good.
Yeah, when you use tilt wall construction, usually it's... They use separate finishes at the end in order to break up the facades and windows and that sort of thing. I know what you're talking about.
Well, it's raw now. I'm sure it'll look better, just like the parking garage after they got through with the decorative treatment.
Yes.
Bronze, I've got a question for you, just a point of clarification. Yes, in the paragraph that you have highlighted right now. Why is stucco limited to not exceeding more than 50%? It seems like it's a pretty standard, decent looking finish. Is there a reason for that being? I wasn't sure if that was going to cause hardships for people.
I think stucco, it was intended for stucco not to be the front facade, because our glazing requirements allow glass to be in the front of those buildings so that we get these sorts of treatments where it's about a 50-50 split between, cornices and lighting and stucco. So maybe we should say...
So it's really to encourage glass. It's really to make sure that there's more...
Correct.
For the front.
We just don't want a big stucco block.
That makes sense.
Did we say front facade?
Front facade, yes, sir. I believe that is because, actually, fire marshal's not going to like windows on a side facade where it's butting up against another building. That's for sure.
Very good.
Okay.
And I had a question on the next paragraph where he says structures shall be sited so as yes. to create visual relationships with sidewalks. What is a visual? Everything has a visual relationship. I wasn't sure what you.
We'll get deep into the architect speak here.
Again, do you mean like aesthetically pleasing visual relationships or?
Yeah, that's pretty. It's pretty nebulous.
I mean, I have a visual relationship with my computer right now.
Really, there's nothing of substance within that entire paragraph, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
With what all we've got, is anyone married to keeping this in here?
No.
No. Okay.
Why don't you take it out?
Okay.
Okay.
Glazing requirements, lower story, high proportion of glazing to solid wall, first story, non-residential buildings on Orange Ave, 60% minimum glass, first story, allowed up to 20 feet. Along other roads, the OEO non-residential buildings shall have 40% minimum glass on the first story. And then anything above there is just, you've got to have that facade breakup, which could be windows or whatever. We don't want to predetermine kind of the site plan and layout for upper floors. This one here is just about defining the building entrance. I think we kind of went back to that a little bit old school style of where you have the recessed entrance there. Doesn't have to be that way, but we just want clearly defined entrances because they have the nice awnings. We're stealing a little bit from Park Ave and the other places that create a good walkable area.
Okay.
All right. This next requirements are straight from our existing code where it talks about you can have chimneys, architectural appendages, roof decks that have a little bit more height than the building roof area. And you can go up to 10 feet additional height. That's a lot of that is for if somebody wants to have a roof deck that's uncovered, they probably need to have an elevator. And if you have an elevator, there's a lot of equipment on top that goes along with that. And then we did add solar panels because that's one of the menu items can be permitted to exceed the roof height. Upon approval of the city commission, basically saying, you know, if they're wanting to use solar panels as one of their menu items, they're allowed to do that.
Well, solar panels don't usually project up very much.
Yeah, you are correct, sir. But if there is a case where they do, and even if it's just a foot beyond code, we want them to be allowed.
Yeah.
This is just standard language from our code here that talks about, you know, mechanical penthouses, rooftop, AC units, HVAC, stair towers, elevators, parapets. This is just to help keep this out of the visual realm from the passerby. All right, this next one is new. We are going to have an appearance review.
Quick little correction after the first sentence. In addition to meeting, the architectural standards as set forth in this section. I think that should be a comma, not a period. And then it, and then all is, yeah, lowercase. All right, go ahead.
Okay. It basically just says all renovations that are of larger buildings shall have to undergo review by this new board. We, because they have standards to create 3D renderings and that sort of thing, for the buildings that are under 10,000 square feet, it can be quite a cost and be very onerous for them to have to go get somebody to draw 3D renderings rather than just submit a building permit. They're still going to have to meet the standards within this code, but it is just a major expense to go get 3D renderings done for somebody who's just doing some outside facade work on their building. And so that's why we have this in there, just to kind of help the small business. Is that okay with members of the board?
Okay.
Okay. And then this is where we get into the bigger projects. If you have, and this is the language we have right now, if it's over 80,000 square feet, if it's got more than 25 units or has more than 35,000 square feet, you have to provide digital architectural perspective images and elevations of everything. It has to go through the appearance review advisory board. And if it's going to have a roof deck, you may have to have an, you know, acoustical engineer take a look at it, and all of the comments and recommendations that come out of the appearance review board go into the consideration of the memo coming to you from my department. The appearance review board does not have any authority except to provide advice on what they think would look better or be a different treatment that could be used, but we will include their comments to you.
Bronx, why is an acoustical engineer involved? Is that
if you're going to have
noise affecting somebody else?
Yeah, if you're going to have a roof, you know, a rooftop, say you have a rooftop lounge or something like that, that's a part of your business. If you've got neighboring property owners, it may be an instance where an acoustical engineer could be required.
Isn't there a noise cancellation at 10 p.m. or?
There is a noise ordinance.
Okay.
We don't have to have that language in there.
No, it's fine.
Okay. For all external renovations requirements.
Yeah, that paragraph needs a little tweaking.
It does. It just kind of repeats the same word.
Yeah, well, and the first sentence should end at improvement. It's like the fifth line, parking areas, parking structures, and any other site improvement. And then it would be a period, and then it would be like these renderings shall be submitted.
Yeah, I think it's done a very pretty paragraph there. Okay, for all external renovations are requiring conditional use, but are larger than 10,000 square feet, shall require. This is for if it's a larger than 10,000 square foot renovation, you've got to provide the 3D renderings, because that's a pretty sizable.
So it should really read all external renovations, not requiring a conditional use. You don't need the four. And then when, as you go on, it would say, and elevations that show all sides of the proposed buildings, parking areas, parking structures, and any other side improvement, period. These renderings shall be submitted. Everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, looks good.
This one's from last time. We just had this sentence randomly placed, and it was at a place, so we found a new home for it.
Okay.
All right.
On the paragraph at the top of the page, the last line.
Yes.
No on-street parking shall be permitted.
Yep.
We're good.
All right. Parking requirements. And I'll tell you where these differ from what current code states. A, B, and E were all changed as a part of our parking modernization that happened a few years ago. Medical office, one per 200. There are some things that, though we're trying to be smarter with parking and share parking, there are some types of offices that you just can't be without a good number of parking spaces. Medical office is one of those. And quite honestly, our minimums are often not sufficient for developers. They say the market demands more parking than we're providing. One thing we did change is hotel, one space for each guest room, and then basically all the other ancillary uses provided at 50%, because right now the way we do parking for hotels is if you have a hotel, you have one parking space per room. You have one parking space for, you know, we have the number of parking spaces for every seat in the restaurant. You have one parking space for every requirement in the ballroom, if you will, where it's kind of obvious that a lot of the guests in the hotel, if there's an event, are going to be there for that event or are going to be eating at that restaurant. And so we're trying to, instead of having large empty garages, be a little smarter about that. And then for multifamily residential, this is where we made a significant change. Prior to this code, we say that every single multifamily residential unit shall provide 2.5 spaces, period. So if you had 10 studio apartments, you would have to have a 25 space parking lot, which is quite onerous. And so we did what basically every other city does, and you have the number of spaces required goes up by the number of bedrooms within that particular unit. And so this, you know, people pick on the Paseo a lot, but the Paseo, the whole top level and part of the level below it is empty because parking, we required too much parking for that. Off-street parking design. This is just another thing to say, garages not at the front of the building. We like cross-access easements. If we're kind of rebuilding some areas, we're trying to reduce the number of curb cuts onto our onto 1792, onto Orange, onto Fairbanks, because every time you introduce a curb cut, it introduces another conflict point. And the reason why Orange Avenue is the most dangerous road in town is you have to basically pull out into the two lanes, and then you're turning, almost turning blind in a lot of ways, turning left, trying to get across two lanes. And just a whole lot of pretty bad accidents happen out there. And so the less curb cuts we have, and to force people to go to intersections and places where it's safe to turn is our goal. But also we have to work with FDOT, because if it's their right of way, curb cut permits, all that sort of stuff has to be coordinated through them. And we like people to share rear alleys and rear access, and instead of every single small little parcel having their own single ingress and egress, and you can't, even though they're right next to each other, you can't go from one parking lot to another to get down the street. We want them to share parking areas. We want people to be able to flow there. We'd love for them to share dumpsters. We want to kind of clean up the back of house, if you will, I guess. For offsite parking, what we're saying is, here's another benefit to the small properties who are right now are restricted by parking or have zero parking. They can now say they're going from an insurance office to a deli, and they have three parking spaces, but now they need 10. If they can lease 7 spaces within one of the garages or a lot within 750 feet of their location, then they have met their requirement, because we're looking at it kind of an overall parking for the area, not just for each individual business and parking, having the parking lot right in front of it. We're trying to get away from that shopping center type parking where it's just right out front. You know, people are going to have to walk, and we want them to walk.
Right.
But that's a real benefit to the small businesses that have been unable to grow, because right now we say you've got to have your parking on site. Well, it just can't happen in a lot of places. Bike parking requirements on some of these larger projects, if you look at the bike parking requirements, they would have a bike rack for 30 people. That may not be realistic. We love that people are using bikes, but we're saying that they can buy the bike, the bike parking equipment, and we can place it, the city can place it in strategic locations within the right of way where it makes sense, where people can utilize it a little better. Because if we put it all into the garages, it may not get used quite as much. And then we have a parking exclusion, which basically says you're exempt from what you don't have right now. It's the same thing we have Park Ave and other places. The only time you have to add parking, say you have so this is where it really gets into helping the small properties. Say you have a interior design office in an older building, and you've wanted to remodel it for a while, but you went and got your building permit, you found out you're going to add three more parking spaces. Well, I don't have three parking spaces. Now you are going to be excluded from having to have those spaces if you're just remodeling what you already have. The only time you have to add parking, which you can add from somebody who has excess within 750 feet, which we're requiring for the big developers, then you can do your remodel. But unless you add square feet or you change your use, those are the only times you would have to add parking, and then you can find it within the kind of the closest location.
Ron, in that paragraph, another little correction, where you, right in the middle, yes, of the paragraph where it says the OAO shall apply.
Yes.
It makes it sound like the OAO is filing an application.
Yeah, maybe these standards.
Or the OAO shall be applicable to any net new building. Standards. Or however you want to put it. But
how about these standards shall apply?
That's fine. Sure.
Yeah. The OAO is starting to take on a person. Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you, sir. Parking FAR for parking structures. This has gone back and forth. It's something unique to Winter Park. We all know that. Typically, parking garage, typically FAR is for air-conditioned space, I guess is the best way to put it. But in an effort to keep the small-scale village charm and character, we have parking garages counted in the FAR. But where we require you to provide excess parking that then becomes available for the area businesses, we're making you lease it to the area businesses. We're saying you have to build 10% extra, but then you have to turn around and lease it to certain businesses. And there's an opportunity to have shared parking, whatever you know. We want to make good use of the parking garages.
You've got a typo there at the bottom of page 21.
Okay.
After open top level, I think that should be a period, and then developments is a new sentence.
Okay. Yes, anything underground does not count. That's more than 50% underground does not count. Then the open top does not count. And then if you provide at least 10% above minimum, anything above the minimum that you provide does not count towards your parking garage FAR. And then also, as we put previously, any parking that goes towards your workforce housing does not apply towards your FAR. And then it was decided recently that if you take your open top level and you cover it with solar panels, then it will that FAR won't apply where typically it would have. So but there's opportunities for multi-property parking collectives where maybe you have a number of doctors who can get together and finance a parking lot. We're okay with that. In the past, it would have been tough for them to do. And quite honestly, medical office is one of the few office type uses that can fund structured parking, especially if you're just doing a ground level plus one. It's a little bit less expensive than going multi-story. But you have to provide electrical vehicle charging stations. You have to provide at least 10% above your code minimum. And then you have to turn around and make that available for lease to the small businesses in the area. say you have area D, which serves the lesser area of the walk circle, you know, the 750 feet within area D, half of that is across 1792. That's not going to do a whole lot. So, but Progress Point is right in the middle and is going to serve a lot. If Progress Point was building some structured parking in area D, said we will provide our excess parking into, you know, pay for it into your structure, the commission can consider that so that we provide parking in areas where it may make a little bit more sense, be more heavily utilized. It just offers flexibility there. Open stairwells on the outside of the garage for visibility. It just provides for a better level of comfort to have those areas be open, because it's just it can be a very uncomfortable place where people can kind of hang out. And so that was some language that came out of a lot of discussions. We want sufficient airflow. We don't want mechanically ventilated parking structures. We want it to remain open air. And we want, yes, sir.
Number six, you've just got an extra period there after primary structure. Go down, next page. For designed with architectural details to match the primary structure. And then you have a period that you just need to delete.
No, I appreciate it. You did your homework.
And then in subsection seven also, I think the very last line, first opportunity to purchase, should be a separate sentence. Buy other properties, period.
Gotcha.
Here we go.
Probably should say purchase or lease.
Everybody's being very quiet.
It all looks good.
All right.
Hire David as an editor.
I'll speak up when I see something.
Well, I'm sure you all will. I'm sure. I'm just making sure we're all awake.
It's funny.
You're doing a good job wordsmithing.
You know what? I went over this weekend, and at the very least, I can correct typos.
All right. Parking structures meet height, building setbacks, building envelope, setback from Orange Ave, kind of same thing. We want the structures to be accessed not from the main roads, architectural style compatible. We want our parking structures to not look like parking structures. And then once you do have a plan, we want you to have a parking management plan submitted to us that shows that you're not triple counting, triple leasing parking that's going to create a situation. And then no structures on the north side of Fairbanks Avenue, because you've got the structures would have to be at the back of the property adjacent to single family homes. All right, public notice and hearing. Citywide notice should be required for comp plan amendments. And any proposed development within the OAO that requires conditional use approval and has, this is all kind of standard here. You have to have it in the paper, blah, blah, blah. Okay. in addition to the notice required by state law and the section within our code for conditional uses that don't qualify for citywide notice, the public notice shall be required as follows. So these are for the projects that, I don't know, say it's a, I'm trying to think of a property that may have a tear down rebuild, but you know, a smaller one that's less than 10,000 square feet. You have to publish it in the newspaper, and then we send notice to all properties within 1,500 feet of the area or of your property, and then you post it on the property. So kind of similar to what we do now, but extending the area around in which we send notice. Public hearings for conditional uses. This was something that was, I know we've talked about that typically we end up having only one public hearing for a conditional use because it is not an ordinance. It typically goes along with a comp plan amendment and a rezoning application, so it ends up having two public hearings, but in this case there's not going to be a rezoning or a comp plan amendment because the overlay takes care of that. So the commission wanted to make sure there was a hearing with you all and then two public hearings before the city commission. So the first would be basically they hear what it is, get public input, no action is taken, then it's put onto the next meeting as the action taken, because again, not being an ordinance, there's no first and second reading of the action.
In that paragraph, Bront, where you say right in the middle of notice given for a conditional use application for a project within the OAO that has, should it be that has any of the following? That, or any of, because the way it sounds, it almost sounds right now like you have to have all of those items in order for the public, in order to have the public hearings. That has any of one, you know. There we go.
Very good. Okay. We are cooking here. How are we doing on time?
We have another half hour. Up. Are we going to 1 or 1:30?
I put 1 on here, but
well, what do people want to do?
We can do whatever the board would like to do.
I vote for 1 p.m.
1 p.m.?
Everybody good with 1 o'clock today?
I'm fine. I'm fine with whatever.
I'm fine either way.
16 pages so far is pretty darn good.
We've done good work. Let's go ahead for another few minutes, get another page done, and then we'll call it.
Meaningful open space requirement. I need to put 1.5 again. This is just for the large properties. You need to have open space at 25% open space dedicated to the public to make this area green, to make it have that special place. I'm going to go back to the, you know, what kind of we use as an example is the area outside of Foxtail. There's nothing truly special about it, except that it makes everybody feel welcome and comfortable. And you've got people of all mixes of life there all the time. And to have that on other properties in a larger capacity is really what this is all about. So that language has been there from the very beginning. For the signage requirements, we just stole the signage requirements right from Park Avenue and put those in here. It keeps the signage from being too overly large or overpowering. If anybody has any comments on that, happy to take those. But sidewalk design utilization, this is just once again making sure if you don't have sidewalk, you have to put it. If it's on Orange Ave, you have to put 17. It's going to be a little bit of a mishmash for a while, but eventually we will have, you know, we do have sidewalk in a lot of those areas, but it's, I think the thing I'm the most excited about is that 5-foot landscape buffer on the back of curb, and then the 10-foot sidewalk, and then the lights and the trees along Fairbanks. It's, it may, you know, right now it's going to look good, but in 20 years, it's going to have a, just a beautiful, fantastic look, that with the utilities undergrounded there, and then these beautiful trees and decorative landscaping, people are going to feel safe walking there. It's going to be nice and shaded and covered. So we're excited about that. Display of merchandise outside of commercial buildings. We just have the standard language we have for Park Avenue, to where you can have, you can move racks outside. They have to leave a clear path of travel, but you can't have anything permanent out there. It's nice. It makes it walkable and makes you want to kind of shop. Contribution to transportation and mobility infrastructure. Transportation. Should I contribute to, I think, should contribute to the, Sarah, you're going to have to help me. Multimodal
transportation impact fee.
Transportation impact fee. And that is coming very soon. But we need to,
that's a long time.
Yeah, we need to take this out because the fee itself is going to do what we're talking about. And if we put in another place, if you have to do, if your project requires any transportation improvements, you are required to put those in on your own as a developer. We should say, if we have it in place, shall satisfy the requirements of this policy. Stormwater management, to increase the efficiency of land use. What do you, would you all like to have this be our stop point for today, since we're at 1 o'clock?
Yeah, let's just confirm stormwater S&T, and then we're at a perfect stopping point before we get into all the sub area standards.
Basically, we're just saying you got to put in stormwater because nothing is there right now. I mean, you take the Holler property, not to pick on them, but they were designed at a time when you're building a car lot, you pave the entire thing, and it wasn't a time that stormwater was really looked at, and that's all runoff into our lakes. And so it's just saying that you have to put in stormwater systems that are approved prior to going in, and you can share it. You can have regional stormwater. We got lots of options, but right now we've got nothing, so anything is going to be an improvement. And then we have sub area maps.
Hold on.
Yes, sorry. I'm sorry.
So stormwater, there's not underground drainage right now, like say for the Holler property.
The only folks I know of for sure who have stormwater treatment is Lamont Garber's building, the Foxtail building, and then former Mayor Leary's buildings have enough parking and stormwater. And those Jewett may have a little bit, but you know, like Progress Point, none. Bank of the Ozarks, none. Jewett or Holler, none. I bet the baseball field does have some, but a lot of it, that's why this, another reason why this area hasn't redeveloped, because those little small A properties, we say put in all the stormwater you're going to need for the building, and they go, well, where the heck am I going to put that? Would be exempt.
Even for the Holler property, it could be a fifth of the site would be for stormwater, does the city allow for like some green options or?
Bet.
So you could do pervious pavement or some green infrastructure in the planters and stuff like that.
And you can even bank some stormwater credits that you can then sell to other small developments in the area. And then this is the sub area map that each one of you will be getting tattooed on your shoulder, I'm sure, after all this fun.
Very good. All right, I think that's a good stopping point, unless anybody wants to change the map.
I really appreciate each of you. This was very good.
How many more work sessions do we have to go through the ordinance?
I believe two more.
Two more. We'll get it. We'll get it done.
Oh yes. Yeah. I mean, we're to the point where this next section that has all of the sub area stuff, we covered a lot of that in the comp plan ordinance. And then you'll get into the enhancement menu, and then all done.
All right, everybody. Thank you all for your attendance and participation.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
You all take care.
Bye-bye.